Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. You can do better than that. Let's try one more time. You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast.
We live in F1.
That was genuinely good. Welcome to Miami with Boxbox Autos. It's Missed Apex Podcast, and we have been out in Miami, and there's been a lot of criticism about the track layout and the lack of action, but I'm here to tell you that you just have to be there. And that is now my opinion. And I appreciate now that maybe Monaco might even be a fantastic track. I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Trumpets. Hello, Matt.
Is that the Astons hitting each other? Is that the Astons hitting each other? Or did we just imagine that?
The Astons hit each other.
They did. But yeah. Was it really Lewis Hamilton's fault?
Oh, we're going to ask whose fault is it. Okay, let's do a quick show of hands in the room. We're at the Haggerty facility, guested and hosted by the magnificent Boxbox Auto Club, who've given us food, who've given me tequila, maybe by deliberate sabotage, but it's lovely, and I've had several. But let's have a show of hands. Oh, no, we're not going to do whose fault is it straight away.
No, we don't have to. I was just doing my little pre-show sentence.
Oh, you always throw me off with the pre-show stuff.
How was that cryptic?
I don't know, because you said, whose fault is it? And that threw me into the segment. But we're also joined by Christina Lee Mace. Hello, Christina.
Hello. I have been around this for the past 3 days. I have been sat at a table while they deal with cables. I'm just sitting there. I'm taking pictures of them doing a good job, doing things. You're doing great, sweetie. It's been fantastic.
She actually tweeted that. You're doing great, sweetie, when we were all pleased that we'd done a glamorous panel. But we should first talk about the Miami experience, because we're filled with a room of sunburnt and sweaty people. We got caught out by the sun yesterday, because in Britain, we've not had sunlight for about 18 months, legitimately. So I got a big sunburn on my back, because I forgot that you're meant to do that. But what do you think of the Miami experience? You've been here before. How has the experience of Miami evolved? I have to say, the stadium is fantastic, even though the layout hasn't produced great racing so far.
Yeah, Miami is one of those places where when you're trackside, it's an absolutely phenomenal experience. The track itself, the racing you get is forgettable, but being trackside, getting to experience they transform that parking lot. It doesn't feel like a parking lot. Like it's that is very, very nice.
Inside the track, it does feel more spectacular than the TV shots. And so badly does it come across on TV that they focused on onboards a lot. I didn't see the helicopter shot very much. But then once you get into the stadium, you've got this massive viewing platform that you can just bring in this whole atmosphere. And I have to say, for us as someone who's never been before, I was completely shocked. Before, we had a panel with a physio
Right, the physio for Kimi and Mika.
Who we've forgotten the name of. Andy, who was that? Mark Arnold, who's a fantastic speaker, but I was surprised to hear him say, I think Miami's the best Grand Prix, because watching it on TV, it doesn't come across like that. Yet, we have been there now, and you go, oh, I think I see why people have said that.
Well, yeah, and this is an interesting thing, and Christina made this very astute point, that we now have the perspective, the context of a fan, in addition to being a fan of the sport, a fan who has attended an event. And I will say, like, if you were here for the experience, then yeah, I totally get Miami. It's glamorous, the food is amazing, the people are warm and friendly, and the traffic is, well, there's barely any traffic at all. Okay, wait, I might be exaggerating, but only because I'm from New York. Yeah.
So also, we have a rogues gallery here as well. So from our MotoGP podcast, we're joined by Adam Rosales, who will be chipping in when he can. Hello, Adam. He's got limited value because he thinks that motorbikes are real, but we'll take your take every now and then. You also run r/letsgotoracetracks.com.
Grand Prix Travel.
Grand Prix Travel, okay. So Adam's been critical in helping us. In fact, you gave us a great guide on which seats are shaded and which seats later become sunspots.
Yes.
For the second time, it helped me from getting sunburned again. And we've also got from Le Batard Show, I always get that wrong, we've got Jessica Smetana. Hello, Jess. If you need to yell anything at me, you feel free to do so.
I was actually given a message for you.
Oh, that is really ominous. And can I say, as somebody who doesn't take that kind of news well, if the boss says, oh, can I have a quick word with you tomorrow? That's the whole 24 hours is ruined. And so Jess told me this about 15 minutes ago, and now I've been dreading it. What is it?
Nate Saunders told me to ask you how you feel about Ipswich Town.
Oh, okay, that's a very niche reference, because that's the local rivals to my football team, Colchester United. Nate is a big player, he's ESPN, they've got good friends with Chris Medland. So if you're listening, Nate, Ipswich Town fans, I would say, and I don't want to do hyperbole, are worse than multiple murderers. Like, it's being an Ipswich fan is a worse crime than running across the road just randomly strangling ferrets.
Putting your can into the non-recycle bin?
Well, actually, my children asked me, they said, do Ipswich Town fans love their children? And I had to be honest, I had to say, not like we do, son. Not like we do.
He watched the entire match today with Ed Sheeran, just so you know.
Okay. Well, thanks for transmitting that bad news. So the Rogue Gallery will just wave if you want to deliver any more bad news or,
well, except for having technical difficulties with their microphone.
Who's that?
The Rogue Gallery.
Oh, I see. You're good. I'm glad. I've done that on purpose. I've sabotaged them. Okay. Let's get to our sprint race review. Normally we'd have some music here, but everything is broken. Uncle Steve is going to be saving us from Australia. Hello, Uncle Steve, and thank you. What are we going to start with our race review? I think general impressions of the race. Sprint races have been controversial. They're not going anywhere. And as someone trackside today, I'm now going to be a complete hypocrite and turn around and go, it were better than a practice session, weren't it?
Well, it was, and really, because this is our second day, you noticed it from the moment practice opened. There were cars constantly coming around, well, until Leclerc stopped this session for a while. But it, from a fan point of view, if you're there at the circuit, sprint weekends are kind of brilliant. You get a ton of cars in practice. They're all desperate to learn things. And then you get the sprint quali the same day, which is always generally a lot of random chaos because they can't make two runs in each session. And then you get a race the next day. And for us, it was super fortunate because we wound up on the start-finish straight. So we got to see the launch of Formula One cars in anger. And that, you know, you see it on TV, but when you see it in person, you're like, oh yeah, like I kind of get that you have to be there to really appreciate the immense power of these
beasts and the top speed at the end of the straight as well. But then you find yourself flicking between watching the action and actually trying to watch it on a TV screen as well. So it can be quite hard to follow.
It definitely is. And I mean, didn't do this today, maybe we'll do this tomorrow, but frequently you have the earbuds in, you're listening on your phone to F1 TV in my case. Did not do that today. We'll probably do that tomorrow, even if there's a little bit of a lag, but it's definitely a little disorienting to be like, I'm seeing the cars. Whee! I have no clue what position they're in. I have no clue who's doing well. I don't know anything else happening anywhere else, but I'm happy. The serotonin, it is coming.
You've got a dopamine hit. But what struck me as well is that the cars look closer. So you'd see Verstappen roar by, and then you'd see the Ferrari, and you go, oh, they're kind of close, that's okay. And then you look at the timing screens, you go, oh no, that's normal. So when you look on your TV and you go, 2 seconds, he's falling behind, it's still very close.
What? It is, and that was actually kind of a nice thing about the race today. It was not just Red Bull 13, 15, 18 seconds in front and 19 laps. So, you know, as the master of copium and looking at the tire choice and quali, it has the potential to get interesting with longer stints on the tires. And
everyone drink tires. There you go. Go for it. That's tequila sales are going to go through the roof. Here's an interesting thing from Matt. You said to me before the race, you thought that McLaren could be legitimately the strongest, fastest car this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, so then that you take the opportunity to go, oh, yeah, that's why I did say that. Here's more interesting things about that point.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't get to have that reaction that you wanted to make.
So, okay, the motorsport panel wasn't like this at all.
No, yeah. I think they very much on Friday looked like they had that potential until they wound up on the soft tire. And overnight it transpired, and I already talked to some people about this earlier, that because Red Bull ran Max on the soft tire, because Max was really struggling on it, they came across the fact that they were overheating the tires very easily, the soft tires, because the track's very hot. It's 46, 48°C. It's, I think, maybe the hottest track we've seen all season. So his outlap for the sprint quali, the one that he thought wasn't great but still wound up winning, was over 2 minutes. It was like 2:06, 2:08. And I think Norris's outlap was 10, 12 seconds faster. Doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're talking about the tires being that sensitive, he hit turn one with overheated rear tires, misses the apex, and from that point on, he's just falling farther and farther behind because the track is hot enough, the tires aren't really cooling in the way that the engineers anticipated they might.
So what you suddenly saw was Lando Norris, every time he got on the power, he was constantly losing the rear end. And so you go, that's not because the car wasn't fast, they've just done their prep poorly. So if you want to look at an example of what great prep can do, is it Singapore 2018, the Hamilton miracle lap? Yeah, where he suddenly at the end of the session just pulled out, you know, a second on everybody, just because they'd got that tire prep exactly correct. So that's why Verstappen was turning around and going, where is everyone? So I think Verstappen actually had an awful lap and wondered why he was still on pole. So that's probably why. So Lando Norris should have taken pole position, might have gone on to show that pace in the sprint race, but got brutally taken out by
Lance Stroll.
I'm hearing a lot of Lance Strolls. Okay, so we're going to ask, I haven't got the music, but we're going to ask, whose fault is it? All right, then. I guess we do it as a show of hands. Are you doing the tune in your head? Biddly-bloop-boo, biddly-bloop-boo. Yeah, okay. Whose fault is it? Now, if you're new to Missed Apex, then what we do is we assign blame. And so often, pundits and podcasts just write this off as, well, it's just a racing incident. These things happen in race. Yeah, it's boring. The whole point of assigning blame is saying, do we understand the rules of racing, or do we have a philosophy on the way we want racing to go? So if you just say it's a racing incident, it just means you don't care and your podcast sucks. But I'm not saying, not going to name any particular podcast. I was going to, but I'm not going to. Yeah, I'm thinking, I've got a Rolodex of names, but just laughing off as a racing incident to me is no fun at all. So let's examine that. Christina Limes, whose fault was it?
Strolls.
You're going for Stroll. You're doubling down.
Yeah, I'm throwing a fellow Canuck under the bridge. It's fine.
You going to say, okay, say again?
I'm throwing a Canuck under the bridge.
That's a very Canadian reference. I don't think everyone else is going to understand that. We've got one Canadian. One Canadian got it. Two. You can't just admit to being Canadian. Oh, right, okay.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
And we're in the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yay!
So we've had League Two football in Britain, and now we've had ice hockey. Ice hockey will come up later when we talk about Kevin Magnussen. But there was a few people initially, I have to say, who were saying it was Lewis Hamilton. And as a Lewis, is that the boos? Boo. Okay. As a Lewis Hamilton fan, immediately, as soon as people were saying it's Hamilton's fault, he just dived in, it was stupid. Immediately, like, nuh-uh. Look at it from the onboard of Hamilton, it does look like it's Hamilton's fault.
No, it does.
From his
absolutely.
Onboard.
And from Alonso's onboard.
And I will.
Oh, from Alonso's.
I will happily make the argument that as the third person to that party, it's generally that person's fault.
If you're the latest in there.
If you're the last one to the party, then it's almost always going to be your fault. But really, it would have to be his fault because Alonso was expecting to be able to get out of Stroll's way when Stroll basically was going to turn into him, and Alonso knew that was going to happen. Then he saw Lewis, and he was like, oh, I get it. I'm the middle of this sandwich, aren't I?
I hope Lance Stroll blindly turning into people doesn't become some sort of moronic trend.
But
no, but it's a feature of Lance Stroll's driving where perhaps it's not malicious. He seems to do the things where he just didn't realise that the thing he was going to do would be bad, or that a car already existed in the place he was going to put his car. But I do love this live effect where I can say, at first, I think it looked like Lewis Hamilton's fault, and someone just yells, no, and you're stupid for even thinking it. How dare you even start to have that thought? But because we're biased when it comes to, we all have biases, I wanted it to not be Lewis Hamilton's fault, but I felt like it was. From the Hamilton onboard, it just looked like he'd got in too hot, some understeer had been induced, and he'd gone towards Fernando Alonso. But how do you make it not Hamilton's fault and Lance Stroll's fault?
I mean, you just watched the other video. Like, the moment you get that big aerial shot, which I'm still annoyed that it takes them so long to get that replay going, you know people are gonna wanna see the start, just have it ready to go. You look at it, and then you just see the two Astons, they're going, pew! And then they're gone, and then you just see Lando Norris, like, flying into the air. And then Lewis gets there, and you're just, well...
Yeah, Lewis is there long after the incident has happened. We've got
late to the party.
We've got an input from the Rogues Gallery.
So, I think it was two incidents. First, it was Stroll versus Alonso, maybe Stroll's fault. And then Hamilton was late to the party, like Matt said. And I think that it was Hamilton's fault as well. I think Alonso's race is ruined in two incidents.
Well, okay, the people who were yelling at me that was wrong, is there any objection to that?
Do you want...
Still no, okay. That's actually a fair point, so that would be a separate incident. But for the Lando Norris one, I think you're right, Christina. As soon as we got to the overhead shot, you saw that the...
Is that why you had two kids, so you had two people to blame?
Yeah, I do. And then I make them fight for my love and attention and who's the favourite. And in fact, this might not be good parenting, and Steve, we can edit this out, but... my favourite joke I've ever made is when my daughter was choking on something, and as she was working it through, I turned to my son and I went, fingers crossed, if she dies, you'll be the favourite. And so, but isn't that the best ever joke? Because it's really callous to one of them, and it's clearly implying to the other that he wasn't my favourite. I don't know. I like that.
Yeah. I think it's clever, yes.
Yeah. So... Adam's right. Two separate incidents. So the first one is the one that took Lando Norris out. Again, it's maddening that he does that, and then Fernando Alonso immediately goes, oh, curse the car that hit me after my teammate just wandered into where I was going.
Well, I'm curious if Fernando is surprised he didn't get penalized for that.
That's where I think that Lewis and Alonso both are very good at communicating in a way that benefits themselves. Lewis is better than it, and I think that he took the opportunity to say there was a gap I went for at the perfect time when he paints this picture in the media where he sensed it, he made a mistake, and he's kind of vouching for himself about it.
Yeah, it's that equivalent of if you've ever played Sunday League football, and I'm sure there's an NFL equivalent, where someone just completely wipes you out with a two-footed challenge, and when you complain, they go, yeah, it's a man's game, innit? Get up, get on your feet. Yeah, I went for a gap, and I went for it. And Senna, unfortunately, like, ruined a couple of generations of racing driver with his, when you no longer go for a gap, you're not a racing driver.
I'm just imagining Lewis in his head saying, well, I'm in a Mercedes. It's my only chance. What did you really expect me to do?
But there's a much simpler solution, which is that he went into that corner much faster than was allowable given the existence of the Aston Martin that he eventually hit. But I think the key point is that didn't cause the Lando Norris crash.
And in all fairness, and this is the thing about anything three wide, in Formula One, and Brad has mentioned this before too, people don't appreciate, unless they've had one of those helmets on and been in a car, how limited your peripheral vision actually is. It would be very easy to be on one side of Alonso and have no idea there was a car coming on the other side, and vice versa, which is kind of why I developed the third person of the party generally is the one that causes the problem rule. Because almost always people drive as if there's space to the other side of the car they know exists. And in three, you always wind up somebody in the middle.
Yeah, so Stroll.
That was the overhead picture. You could see Stroll turning out of his lane into Alonso's lane. That's just like stick a knife in him, he's done there.
Apparently Mike Crack said that driving into Fernando Alonso just proves how hungry he truly, truly was.
He was committed.
Yeah. But it's just amazing. Alonso won't ever come out and just say, why did he do that?
Well, can he really? I mean, he technically could, but I feel like that puts you out of a job really, really quickly. And he's good at playing the team game. We know that. He's really good at just saying the right thing for whatever benefits him the most. So as much as I think we would all love to get that like really bitey sound bite from Fernando Alonso being like, yeah, Stroll.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen, is it?
It's not, because he wants to stay with that team. He enjoys being a part of that team. And unfortunately, part of that for him is holding back his tongue, scribbling in his diary about it instead, all the sick burns he would say if he could.
Are you saying he's got like a burn book, like in Mean Girls?
Absolutely. Out of all the drivers, who thinks that Fernando Alonso would be the one to have the burn book?
100%. 2016 power unit burns.
Oh my goodness. So he's saying Lance Stroll is a fugly. Is that the...
Yes.
Saving it all up. Okay, well, I think we've drawn that conclusion, but I think, is anybody going to yell at me too much if then the subsequent collision with Fernando Alonso was Lewis Hamilton's fault just for going in a little bit too hot? I'm not going to win you over, am I? I don't think so. Okay, well, where do we go next with the sprint race, Matt? Because we have got a couple of other whose fault is it, and I'm going to count the amount of other whose fault is it are there. Hang on, in my head, I'm going to count 1, 2, 3, 4. That's Magnussen, and then there was one other.
Magnussen, and Alpine.
Okay, right. So let's start with Kevin Magnussen, the thuggery. So this is where I wanted to get back to ice hockey, because in ice hockey, isn't there a reputation that one person in the team is the enforcer?
Either just the giant wall of a person that gets in the way of everybody and anything. Just keeping them away from whoever they're in charge of defending. And it's...
It doesn't matter if they get sent off. That's one of the key things. Yeah, so they... Yeah, so they can go in the sin bin for wiping out the best... In fact, in football, sin bin...
You don't know sin bin.
Is it not called sin bin?
No, penalty box.
Penalty box.
Can someone who knows rugby back me up that sin... Oh, right, okay. So the term sin bin exists. I'm sorry that they're mocking me for not immediately knowing a random sport that is played on ice where they stop and punch each other. You don't play it in America, do you? You play it in America as well? Oh, okay. I didn't know. I'm getting yelled at.
You play
at
all
so
kinds
much.
Of sports here that you don't know about.
Speaking of there being a hockey team up the road, this is a point with me, and I'm going to get a little hyped up about it, but I think it is absolutely blasphemous that any city that does not have ice outside in the winter, that does not have snow, that you don't need a parka for, it is blasphemous for them to have a hockey team. Also, I believe that the Canadians should be charging the Americans for the export of our hockey talent because we raised them, we developed them, and then they go to the States and boost those economies? Excuse me?
To those people at home, I have lost control entirely, but people here seem to be appreciating it. And I'm just going to turn the camera around for a moment so you can see the lovely people that have joined us. Say hello, Haggerty Motorsport. Louder. These are the people. And I should see the Rogues Gallery as well. So there's Adam and there's Jess as well. If you don't mind, I might bring it back to Formula One.
If you must.
But in soccer... Yeah, I'll go back to, I can do this as well, right? So in 90s football, there was an enforcer for Wimbledon called Vinnie Jones, and he wouldn't mind getting sent off if it meant a two-footed lunge into the best player. But basically, that is what Kevin Magnussen is doing right now, and he's doing it openly, and I can't remember the last time that happened.
I love it.
You love it?
I love it, because I was talking to Christina about this in the two-hour exodus from the stadium back to our house.
If everyone else gets stuck in traffic, or is it just these idiots?
They were all here waiting for
you. Yeah, you know what I said? I said, actually, you would blame me for that if it weren't for the fact that Christina was with me and you knew better.
Yeah, if you had no witnesses, I would be on your case. But anyway.
But no, what I want to say is, and this also is a hockey thing, is there is no rule against what Magnussen did from a team point of view. Yes, there is penalties for his actions, but the problem, and this is becoming more of a problem, is that Formula One has turned into a team sport, and the teams are beginning to discover that the rules don't prevent my driver already out of the points from racking up any number of penalties to protect my driver that's ahead. And as we also learned, it was Hulkenberg, naturally he was protecting, because Hulkenberg had a broken DRS from running over a curb. So he basically, the team said, do what you have to do to keep Hamilton behind you. We don't care how many penalties you get.
They didn't say that. And on the team radio.
I haven't looked at the team radio. They might not have said, we don't care how many penalties you get, but they would have implied that, probably with cash, since it's an American team.
It would be shame, a shame.
Well, I mean, I
can say it now, but we were really
I'll
lined up.
I'll pay you afterwards, yeah.
We were lined up for a Money Grand sponsorship, and it went through to the other guys, and I think it's because of things like this. I think it's because of you.
The fact that I'm actually humorous on occasion, despite my age, well, you know, I do the best I can. But no, it's a problem, because as a driver, you could see what Magnussen did. He could be completely unapologetic about it. He can get a 3-grid-spot drop. He can get 9 million seconds worth of penalty, but at the end of the day, he kept Hamilton behind him. Hulkenberg managed to finish in that position, and I think the FIA needs to get to grips with the fact that the teams are now playing a team game. Like, oh, it's not sportsmanlike. Oh, well, where's sportsmanlike defined in your sporting regulations? Oh, it's really not, is it? So they need to figure out how to keep this situation from getting to the point that it got today. Because I would agree, I don't think it's correct to allow that kind of driving to have that sort of an effect on the end result of a race. But that is a regulatory problem and one the FIA need to solve.
I hate to get all 2021 about this, right? I hate to drag 2021 into this at every available opportunity. Well, I'm gonna. But Magnussen isn't the first team that are doing this. This was deployed by the four-car team that is Red Bull RB Visa Cash App in 2021. So when Verstappen was having to fight through the back of the grid, he would get to Bottas, he would feel a slight flutter of downforce loss, there would be mild inconvenience, his view of the gallery might be slightly blocked by the Mercedes pulling over and letting him by. But when Hamilton had to get through the field, it was like Cannonball Run, and he was having just random AlphaTauris flying in front of him. And you could see Marco on the grid, if you go back and watch the tapes of pre-grid, you know, when the grid walk's happening in 2021, and I can say whatever I want because you're not going to, but you would see Marco talking right in the faces of, was it Gasly and Tsunoda at the time, and they go, you know, and you could see it was like instructions of you, none shall pass, and they fought him every step of the way whether or not it was going to cause a penalty. So actually, I'm surprised it's taken this long, considering that Perez was allowed to do that stuff in 2021, which I don't particularly mind. I think you should work as a team. It's almost surprising that more teams haven't done it quicker.
Well, yeah, and this is the time you get to, because it's not, like, if you go back to Jeddah, for example, you had Magnussen driving a rear gunner role for Hülkenberg. But there, the only real complaint was that the initial getting in front of Tsunoda was because he was off track. But once he was there, his driving was, well, quite defensive. But it was nothing like we saw today. What we saw today, I think we could all agree, worked, but shouldn't be allowed. So if you're the FIA, now you have this problem. Defensive driving is fundamental to Formula One in a way that it isn't so much to IndyCar and other sports.
Wait, what's that? Defensive driving isn't fundamental to IndyCar?
No, you are absolutely not allowed to drive with your mirrors.
Is that right? Are you watching IndyCar?
Yeah, but I feel like, I mean, there was a fantastic post actually today by Felix Rosenquist, basically congratulating Magnussen on being an absolute roadblock. And somebody asked him who in IndyCar filled that role, and he said Alexander Rossi. So if anybody follows IndyCar, it's very on brand, it's very funny. But they do that sometimes, but they don't have a team's championship to fight for. So it's not so much that there isn't defensive driving for the sake of the team, it's more so just sometimes they feel like being buttholes and like blocking everybody as much as they possibly can.
Cool. we apologize for the use of the
Spirit
word buttholes.
Kyle Power has joined the podcast.
Okay, so look, since we've got the audience here, do we like Kevin Magnussen doing that? Are there any fans who are like, yeah, get in there, go on then, round of applause for Kevin Magnussen doing that? It's fairly popular. Who thinks he's being a poopy butthole? It's a bit more of a... You're on the fence. Both. Yeah, so I suppose you can say it is definitely bad. It's definitely punishable, but fair play. But do you actually want to see F1 descend to that? Because if you were to say no penalty, obviously... And it is no penalty, because effectively he was out of the points anyway, so he's not lost anything by doing that. So I feel this is now an open book for everyone to do that. But to review the actual incidents, Hamilton got past him on a cutback, and Magnussen just said no and just drove into him. Literally just cut back in and drove into him. And then the second time, just drove him off track. So it is penalised. Yeah, it was a Rosbergian move. All right, okay. Okay, so I think we all agree all of those were Kevin Magnussen's fault. He agrees they were Kevin Magnussen's fault, and he didn't care. And I don't know whether to love it or hate it. I'm obviously influenced. If he did it to, for example, Ocon, I wouldn't care as much. Yeah, I know, yeah. No one would care. One single elderly American would care. Yeah. Okay, on to happier times. Daniel Ricciardo is back.
I mean, he had one good day. Two good days? How did you do in China?
He's back. So he had the sprint race quali and then held it for the sprint race.
Yeah. So he had a good, 12 hours, 24 hours, you know? I'm very cautious to say that having a good couple of moments means that he's fully back. At the end of the day, you have to display that consistency of, yes, I am fully back to form. Yes, this is what's going to consistently happen time and time again. So does it give me a little bit of hope? Yes, absolutely. It was nice to see a little break in the clouds. But then, you know, we moved on to qualifying and he was all the way at the back. And he blames it on the tires, but it's his team and his job to know about the tires. That is part of the game. So you can't really go around saying, oh no, we didn't really do anything wrong, but this was the problem. It's well, you're saying that there wasn't a problem and that there was a problem in the exact same sentence.
Yeah.
The heat is getting to him, I think.
So I forgot that after I wrote on the notes, Danny Rick is back, it's real, that he then immediately qualified last and is starting from the back of the grid. So that is on me. That is my bad, and thank you for correcting that. We'll see if he's back again tomorrow.
But let's not overlook the fact that he's got a 3-spot grid penalty to be served from China. So the team might well be focusing more on his performance in the race tomorrow than in qualifying today. But I think I'm going to have to agree with Christina, because the announcer said, oh, blah, 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 Tsunoda, who is his benchmark now for being compared to. So they said that Tsunoda was Ricardo's benchmark. And I'm like, that's just got to smart if he hears that a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, did you know that Haas got its first ever podium today? Let's hear it. Who knows what I'm talking about? Let me hear about it. That's right. Now, I would normally give Spanners a lot of grief. Well, I might anyway. I would normally give him a lot of grief about not knowing this. But he valiantly left the track hours early to come set us up technically. So in between...
And then broke my mixing desk and had to borrow kit.
Yes. In between when you left and when qualifying happened, they had the F1 Academy race. And Haas, sponsor driver, Chloe Chambers, who I have known about since she was on the David Letterman show when David interviewed Lewis Hamilton, went from P6 to P3, including an unbelievable overtake, three wide, and managed to hold off, was it a Wu that was behind her? Do you remember?
It was
a fight to the finish, but she held on for Haas' first ever podium. And I just wanted to bring that up because Chloe is also an American. It was nice to see her finally doing well.
I thought you were going to say it was nice to see an American finally doing
well. I saw plenty of Americans today, my friend. Don't worry.
Doing well at F1. No.
Yeah, we were all doing quite well at the F1. We were drinking beers and eating food. It was wonderful.
Massive news, though, for F1 Academy while we're here.
Oh, the documentary. So with Netflix and with Sunshine Production Company, I believe that's their full name, it might not be, but Reese Witherspoon's production company are going to be doing a Netflix series about F1 Academy's season. So we can look forward to seeing that next year.
Okay, that's good. All right, well, while we're still with Formula One, you know, why not? League, FA Academy, hockey. The sprint race format, unfortunately, has it completely given away what we've got to look forward to tomorrow?
I'm not sure that it has, because we had, you know, aside from the soft tire qualifying, I've noticed that the cars tend to have differential performance characteristics when they're full of fuel. So some cars will do better full of fuel, some cars will do better at lighter fuel, and they're all pretty light. They're only fueled for 19 laps, so it's not a lot of, not a lot of gas in the tank. And that changes it, but also you don't get the full degradation of the tire in those, everyone's basically, because there's no pit stop, you don't have the tire strategies, even in a one stop, to play out where you can go for the undercut or go for the overcut. And we've seen hints that Ferrari is particularly good on tires, so if it's a hot day and it's harder tires, they might have more left in the tire at the end of his stint than Red Bull, which I'm not convinced based on Max's lap. And even today, he wasn't really all that far ahead of Charles. I think, again, it's like one of those sort of things where if you're playing high-low poker and someone has an obvious high hand and you have an obvious low hand, you're like, yeah, let's just split this up and be done with it. I kind of feel like the race was that today between the top two riders. But tomorrow, it could be interesting. It might rain. I don't know. Anything could happen. Norris could win. I mean, you know, I know. Norris. Is he another one like Hülkenberg with a deal?
Oh, no. Has Norris got a curse?
Do you think he might have a curse?
No, he's got billions of pounds, I think, so he's fine.
No, I think there are things to watch for in the race. But it would be wrong of me to pretend like there's some big, huge mystery about who's the odds-on favorite.
Fair enough. I think for the podcast listeners at home, that ends our sprint race review. The people here are going to go and get themselves a drink and then fix F1. Wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Thank you very much. Go and get a drink. I don't know if we can get some music on. The DJ's falling asleep. Go and get yourself something to drink, nibbles if they're still out there, and we'll come back in 5 minutes or so and fix Formula One.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.